Numbers chapter 6, and we read from the first verse. This is God's word. The Lord said to Moses, "Speak to the Israelites and say to them, if a man or woman wants to make a special vow, a vow of separation to the Lord as a Nazarite, he must abstain from wine and other fermented drink, and must not drink vinegar made from wine or other fermented drink. He must not drink grape juice or eat grapes or raisins. As long as he is a Nazarite, he must not eat anything that comes from the grapevine, not even the seeds or the skins. During the entire period of his vow of separation, no razor may be used on his head. He must be holy until the period of his separation to the Lord is over. He must let the hair of his head grow long. Throughout the period of his separation to the Lord, he must not go near a dead body. Even if his own father or mother or brother or sister dies, he must not make himself ceremonially unclean on account of them, because the symbol of his separation to God is on his head. Throughout the period of his separation, he is to be consecrated to the Lord. If someone dies suddenly in his presence, thus defiling the hair he has dedicated, he must shave his head on the day of his cleansing, the seventh day. Then on the eighth day, he must bring two doves or two young pigeons to the priest at the entrance to the tent of meeting. The priest is to offer one as a sin offering and the other as a burnt offering to make atonement for him, because he sinned by being in the presence of the dead body. The same day he is to consecrate his head. He must dedicate himself to the Lord for the period of his separation and must bring a year-old male lamb as a guilt offering. The previous days do not count because he became defiled during his separation. Now this is the law for the Nazarite when the period of his separation is over. He is to be brought to the entrance to the tent of meeting. There he is to present his offerings to the Lord, a year-old male lamb without defect for a burnt offering, a year-old ewe lamb without defect for a sin offering, a ram without defect for a fellowship offering, together with their grain offerings and drink offerings, and a basket of bread made without yeast, cakes made of fine flour mixed with oil, and wafers spread with oil. The priest is to present them before the Lord and make the sin offering and the burnt offering. He is to present the basket of unleavened bread and is to sacrifice the ram as a fellowship offering to the Lord, together with its grain offering and drink offering. Then, at the entrance to the tent of meeting, the Nazarite must shave off the hair that he dedicated. He is to take the hair and put it on the fire that is under the sacrifice of the fellowship offering. After Nazarite has shaved off the hair of his dedication, the priest is to place in his hands a boiled shoulder of the ram and a cake and a wafer from the basket, both made without yeast. The priest shall then wave them before the Lord as a wave offering. They are holy and belong to the priest, together with the breast that is waved and the thigh that was presented. After that, the Nazarite may drink wine. This is the law of the Nazarite who vows his offering to the Lord in accordance with his separation, in addition to whatever else he can afford. He must fulfill the vow he has made according to the law of the Nazarite. Thus far, the reading of God's word. In the 1960s, there was a radical countercultural movement that saw both men and women growing out their hair. Now I have to confess, dare I say boast, that I'm too young actually to have participated in that. Those of you who are not very much older than me can certainly remember that taking place. Is this what we see in Numbers chapter 6, a group of hippies for Jesus? Well, probably not, because after all, the hippies were not exactly known for abstaining from wine or other intoxicating substances, for that matter. So it's clearly not quite that. Well, is it, on the other hand, the precursor of the medieval monastic movement? The monks took a voluntary vow of poverty, chastity, and obedience, so they could devote their lives to the service of God through the pursuit of asceticism. Well, that's closer, but the differences between the monk and the Nazarite are as striking as the similarities are. Both monk and Nazarite were devoted to God, but the Nazarite was not an ascetic. Apart from abstaining from wine and grapes, he could eat or drink whatever he liked. He could live in a fine house. He could sleep in a comfortable bed. He could enjoy normal marital relations. And the Nazarite vow was normally only temporary. So the Nazarite was not exactly committed to an ascetic lifestyle as a higher, more spiritual way to serve God. Well, if he wasn't a hippie and he wasn't a monk, what was he? In essence, the Nazarite vow was a temporary separation from normal life to be devoted to God in a special way. And in so doing, what the Nazarite did was provide a mirror in which for Israel to look and to be reminded of who she ought permanently to be as a holy nation. The Nazarite, you see, was a person who was consecrated to the Lord, just as Israel as a nation ought to have been consecrated to the Lord. And so every time you looked out and you saw a Nazarite walking by, you were to be reminded of who you ought to be. Let's look to begin with at the nature of the Nazarite vow. A Nazarite was a man or a woman whose vow was a temporary personal commitment to avoid essentially three things. Grapes and alcoholic beverages were the first thing. Secondly, they were to let their hair grow and not cut it. And then thirdly, they were to stay well away from dead bodies. But each of those commitments was to be carried through to radical lengths. The Nazarite was not just to abstain from wine or strong drink. He was also to stay away from vinegar, grape juice, grapes, raisins, even down to the seed and the skin of grapes. He wasn't just avoiding the intoxicating effects of one too many alcoholic beverages. He was doing without everything associated with the grape. Now, since wine was the primary symbol of joy in the ancient world, this was a vivid commitment to turn away from pleasure, the pleasures of this world. Similarly, the Nazarite was not simply to let his hair grow out a little bit. He was to let it grow long without cutting it at all throughout the length of his vow. Now, because the hair is a living part of the body that keeps on growing, at least for most of us, for some of us, a Nazarite vow wouldn't be much of a promise, would it? But for most of us, the hair keeps on growing without our involvement in the process. It was a vivid symbol of life in the ancient world. And so to give over your hair to growing without your restriction of it was a sign of giving God the reins of your life. And then finally, the Nazarites were not simply to stay away from corpses in general. Everybody in Israel was to stay away from corpses in general. But in normal life, there were exceptions to that. Somebody had to prepare the bodies of the dead for burial, and normally that would be a close relative. But the Nazarites were to stay away even from the bodies of the closest family members if they should die. And again, this was a vivid symbol of separation from the realm of death in order to serve the living God. You see, these are not just random commitments, as if the Nazarites made a resolution that from now on they were going to exercise for 60 minutes every day and stay away from carbohydrates and sugar. The Nazarites were making an extreme, radical, but focused commitment to serve the Lord, far more radical than anything devised in the 60s. Now, each of these areas of commitments, alcohol, hair control, and corpse contact, each of those areas was also regulated for the priests, but in a less extreme way. Now, the priests, too, had to abstain from alcohol, but only when they were on duty, when they were serving. Wine was a gift from God and was intended to bring joy and gladness, but there was also time to abstain from that joy and gladness while in the service of the Lord, because God needs to be served carefully. It's a risky business, as we saw earlier in the book of Numbers. You wouldn't want to be just like those, you get those things on your pills that say, don't operate heavy machinery when using this medication. Well, in the ancient world, we don't serve around the tabernacle while you're on this medication. You needed to be in full control of your senses. Likewise, priests had to be careful with their hair. They were forbidden to shave it. And the high priest in particular was not allowed to disarrange his hair as a sign of mourning. And then priests generally had to be careful to avoid contact with the dead because that would make them unclean, unable to serve God. And the high priest in particular, like the Nazarite, was not allowed to come into to mourn even his father or his mother. And so when you put those obligations together, what you can see is that the Nazarite was a kind of temporary lay priest. He enabled ordinary people to, as it were, for a period of time, become priests and live according to that special level of ritual purity that was demanded of those who lived their lives constantly in God's presence. And that's what made the Nazarites a picture of what Israel ought to be. Remember, Israel, according to Exodus 19:6, was called to be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. God had chosen them uniquely out of all the nations of the earth to be His, to dwell in their midst. And the existence of these Nazarites would constantly have reminded them of the necessity to be different, to be holy. You can see that, for example, in the person of the prophet Samuel. You remember that Samuel was born at a time of great spiritual decline. The priests of that day, Hophni and Phinehas, the two sons of Eli, were bringing religion into disrepute by profiting themselves out of the sacrifices that were offered and sleeping with the women who were serving at the temple there. And Samuel entered this dark picture as a child, dedicated from before his birth by his mother to be a lifelong Nazarite. And his devotion to the Lord is a constant contrast with the corruption of Hophni and Phinehas. In fact, the narrator highlights that by shooting the spotlight back and forth between Hophni and Phinehas and Samuel, and Hophni and Phinehas and Samuel, inviting you to set them side by side and draw your own conclusions. Samuel the Nazarite, you see, was a living picture in his own day of who Israel ought to have been as a people of God. Now, of course, simply taking a Nazarite vow doesn't transform you internally, as the example of Samson demonstrates. Now, you remember that like Samuel, Samson was dedicated to be a Nazarite before his birth, according to the instructions given to his mother by the angel of the Lord. But a less dedicated Nazarite than Samson would be hard to conceive. You remember, far from wanting to be separate from the nations around him, Samson's first act as an adult that's recorded for us is seeing a Philistine woman and wanting to get married to her. It's not exactly separation, in the right way. And as he's going down for that wedding, you remember that he comes across the corpse of a lion, and there in the corpse of the lion is a bee's nesting, making honey. Now, what should a Nazarite do when he sees a corpse? He should go the other way. What does Samson do? Well, he sees the honey. And what Samson sees, Samson